Hello and welcome to the podcast from the Foundation for Science and Technology. This week we're discussing advanced and composite materials, and my guest is Dr. Geoffrey Neal, the Royal Academy of Engineering Research Fellow and lecturer in Composites and Advanced Materials Centre at Cranfield University, and also a member of the 2024 Foundation Future Leaders Programme. Dr. Neal, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Gavin. I'm very happy to be here and happy to contribute.
So we're talking about composite materials, but let's just help me out here. I hear this word a lot. What is actually a composite material? What does the word mean?
So composite, it in its original sense, is a material that's composed of two separate materials. And the reason you have two separate materials, so they're composed of two different materials, composites, is because you want to take the best of both worlds of the two different materials and sort of smash them together. So things like, you know, wood is a natural composite containing, you know, cellulose as well as the actual fibers in the material and some sort of, you know, bioorganic plasticizers that sort of put everything together. But when I'm talking about composite material, I'm mainly speaking about fiber reinforced plastics. So these are composed of some sort of fiber. So, you know, carbon, glass fiber, natural fiber. So nowadays we use things like flax and jute or aramid, more commonly known as Kevlar. And we sort of put these things together in like a fabric or a mat. And we infuse a plastic or a resin or some sort of plastic material into that. And what you get is the great strength or the sort of structural properties from the fiber. And then you get the stiffness and the glue that holds everything together in the resin, in the plastic. So this, when we predominantly talk about composite materials, we talk, or I at least talk about fiber reinforced plastics, but there are composites made of other fiber materials that are reinforced with, you know, ceramics or metals, or, you know, might be nanoparticles with other plastics or other matrix materials that hold everything together.
Great, that is really helpful. The other term that we're going to talk about is advanced materials. Are they the same? Are they different?
So advanced materials, I think, have a very wide-reaching meaning. You know, in the way we look at this, these are the materials that we need for the future. These are the materials that push the boundaries of material science and allow us to do things and make structures that are, you know, beyond our wildest dreams. You know, some of the buzzwords, the catchy ones at the moment, are things like, you know, graphene and carbon nanotubes. You have amorphous metals. You have shape memory alloys. These are all advanced materials that have, you know, wide-reaching structural and functional. So when I mean functional, I mean non-structural applications across many different sectors. And without these materials, we won't be where we are as a society.
So you've talked about many different sectors. Give me a few examples of the use of some of these materials and how they're better or at least different to traditional materials.
So I think the thing to unpick there first is that, you know, when I talk about composite materials, there's sort of two types of composites. There are a thermoset composites, which are not recyclable. They're made out of polymers that set and can't be remelted, and they're thermoplastic composites, which are made out of polymers or plastics that we can remelt again and again and again. And the sort of the difference, if you want a nice analogy here, is that thermoset plastics are kind of like concrete. You know, you mix it all together, you put it in a slab and it cures and that's it. You can't unmake concrete. You know, it is now hard forever. Whereas thermoplastic composites are made of materials that sort of a bit more like water. You can sort of freeze it into ice and you can unfreeze it and freeze it and unfreeze it again and again and again. But the real question is, you know, which one do you want to build your house out of? If this house has to last for, you know, 100 years or so, you know, you're going to choose, you know, the stronger, the more durable material. So sort of going back to your question about applications, you know, they're wide reaching. I mean, I think some of the most common things that we see that we interact with day to day are things like planes, you know, airplane wings. And I think it's always a bit strange whenever you talk to people and tell them that their airplane is effectively made out of plastic. They sort of, you know, open their eyes up slightly and sort of get a bit worried. But it is very, very strong plastic. But wings, you know, the rotors on airplanes, interiors, you know, we have cars, you know, electric vehicle cars, and we've tried to make them lighter and stronger. Lots of composites going into these things. Renewable energy streams, so things like wind turbine blades, tidal blades, rail infrastructure, you know, the actual rail carriages. Quite a lot of these interior structures are made out of composites. Across the marine sector, you have small craft, naval vessels, and of course, defense and construction. So the applications are very wide-reaching, and I think it's quite nice to look at this as a wide-reaching composites UK base.
Sure. And you mentioned a couple of potential advantages in what you were just saying. So one of them was weight, and one of them was strength. Are those the main two advantages compared with traditional materials, or do we see a range of other different properties about composites that are particularly useful?
So traditionally, when they were developed in the 50s and 60s, this was the main driver, reduction in weight, an increase in strength, and an increase in stiffness were the main industrial drivers behind this. And these materials were very expensive, so they were predominantly fixed in aerospace. Nowadays, the applications have widened out quite nicely, and we no longer only solely focus on this weight and strength application. We now know and realize that these materials have really good corrosion resistance, so if you want them in sort of marine environments, they're particularly good for this. Depending on how they're formulated, they have, good high temperature resistance. If you look at, ceramic composites, these are in the nuclear industry, this is fairly common. We look at, using these things for we embed materials in them to make them thermally conductive, for example. So if you look at electronic, I'm sorry, electric vehicle battery boxes, you have these really hot batteries inside that need to sort of dissipate the heat through, and we can sort of tailor these composites to make them conduct this heat away from the battery. So I think there's a lot more in terms of what we can do with composites nowadays because we're open to blending more materials together. Gone are the days of just carbon fiber and some sort of, plastic together. Now we have carbon fiber mixed with metals, mixed with nanomaterials, mixed with plastic, mixed with all sorts of different things that make these composites.
So that fantastic mixing process, let's talk a little bit about the manufacture of these things. And as you said rightly, years ago, these things were really pretty expensive, quite complicated to make, and were only therefore going to be used in industries like aerospace. How do you make composites, and are they competitively priced for the sort of markets that we're talking about?
Yeah, so looking at the traditional sort of fiber reinforced polymer composites, fiber reinforced plastic composites, it's quite simple. You start off with effectively a textile version of this composite, so either some sort of woven fabric made up of carbon or flax or jute or aramid or whatever material you want. You sort of stack this up into a nice stacking configuration that you want, depending on what properties you're trying to get out of it. So depending on the strength, you sort of change the orientation and stacking sequences of this fabric. And then you infuse large amounts of resin into the material to sort of wet everything out. And then you pop all of this into effectively a big oven, bake it until it's solid, and that's your manufacturing process. So it's fairly simple, deceptively so. But there's been quite a lot of time, effort, energy that's gone into making this as cost-effective as possible, as environmentally sustainable as possible, and as sort of as easy to do from a labor and skills perspective as possible. And we're at the stage now where the price has come down quite a lot to the point where, sort of lower cost industries are willing and able to use these materials. But you do have, both ends of the spectrum. You have composites that are made of, really, really high value materials, high strength, high modulus carbon fibers, which can be very pricey. And at the same time, you have composites made of, flax or hemp, that are fairly cheap, with, sort of run-of-the-mill resins like polyurethane or epoxies that are fairly cheap. So you do it spreads throughout the whole cost value chain from really, really cheap that you can sort of do this in your back garden with a paintbrush and some fibers, to the point where you have, large industrial manufacturing supply chains that go into this. Yeah.
So let's talk about the environment, and that's one of the things that you mentioned in a whole range of things. There's obviously the environmental effect of manufacturing the composites, and there's environmental effects of manufacturing everything. But one of the concerns that people have, rightly, is the sort of the prevalence of plastics in the environment post use. So can you sort of unpick this a little bit? Tell me a little bit about plastics in the environment and where we find them, but also not all plastics are the same. So as we have this conversation about making composites, are we in the zone of making things that are durable for when we want them, but are not durable in the environment afterwards? Where are we?
Yep. So where we are is it's a very complicated picture, which I will do my best to sort of explain as nicely as possible. So as I mentioned, you sort of have these two camps of plastics. You have the plastics that sort of you make them and then they're there forever and it's very difficult to get rid of them. And then which is more like the concrete, as I mentioned earlier. And then you have the plastics which are more like the water that you can sort of melt and remelt time and time again. Now dealing with both of them, you know, are quite energy intensive processes. And I think, you know, the public gets a bit frustrated when, you know, you buy something that comes in a plastic container and you see on the back of it, you know, half of it says it's recyclable and the other half of it says, oh, no, you can't recycle this. And I think, you know, looking at this, you kind of think, but, you know, they're all plastic. Why? But it's this fundamental problem or this fundamental distinction that causes it. Some of them can be recycled fairly easily and some of them it's a bit more of a difficult process. But the key thing to note here is that, you know, we're a global leader in the UK in the exploitation of composite materials. We make quite a lot of this stuff and it goes into loads of our industries. They are large research programs, you know, funded by, you know, directly by the government, also by sort of, you know, funding agencies like the Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council. You know, they fund the Center for Innovative Manufacturing and Composites. There's a manufacturing catapult dedicated to composites. So this is the National Composite Center. You know, you're talking, you know, countless PhD students through, you know, centers for doctoral training partnerships, industrial PhD programs and so on. So from the environmental perspective, we're really approaching this, you know, from a sustainability perspective, you know, at multiple levels, you know, from fundamental research all the way up. And the big thing here is that, you know, the way we look at this is that there's sort of a couple main challenges or a couple main developments from a sustainability perspective. One, we want to make sure that the inputs to this cycle are low carbon feedstock. So we try to make sure that we maintain a circular economy basis for this. So we try to get sustainably sourced materials and sort of keep this in a closed loop where we recycle as much as is possible from the camp of what can be recycled. And we make sure that we take the waste materials from things that can't be recycled and we sort of use them for other valuable propositions. So we can melt down or sort of synthesize down polymers and plastics for, you know, into oil, for example, for other uses or petrochemicals. We try to make the manufacturing processes as efficient as possible. We use sort of low temperature, fast curing resins, which don't require very expensive and high oven temperatures. UV ultraviolet light curing has proven to be quite good from an environmental perspective. Air sprays are kind of coming onto this as well. Increasing the lifetime of composites is very important. So as I mentioned, we choose, you know, for things that we want to be out there for long periods of time, you know, we choose very durable materials. So when you think of offshore wind, you know, you have your offshore wind turbines, which generate quite a lot of the UK's electrical energy. These things are out there, you know, 10, 20 years. And they're very difficult to access. You know, it requires people to, you know, get out there on a boat, climb up to the top of this thing. And then, you know, if we need to repair and fix, it's a very expensive process. So we make these sort of structures with very durable composite materials. And that means that we use less energy over the lifetime fixing them and maintaining them and this sort of aspect of things. When we can, we reuse and repair a lot of composites and try to recycle as much as possible. Going back to my example of offshore wind, in the past, a lot of this stuff, and even up till now, a lot of this stuff, you know, at the end of its life ends up in landfill, which isn't ideal. There's been large amounts of waste, you know, I think 190,000 tons of carbon fiber polymer waste has been generated from these wind turbines. And the question is, you know, what do we do with these things at the end of life? And unfortunately, these are made out of the composites that are more like concrete. You know, it's hard to deal with them. So what we do is we find clever ways to reuse these materials. You know, I've seen old wind turbine blades used as bicycle sheds, used as new bridges, used as footpaths, you know, as covers and so on. So it's about finding, you know, higher value ways to reuse these materials. And the last one there is inherently, you know, there's a big push at the moment from a research perspective to use more materials that are inherently recyclable. So use more of the water-like composites that you can sort of, in quotation marks, freeze and freeze and unfreeze, the thermoplastic composites we call them, and really a lot of push from chemists about making the materials that we currently can't recycle more recyclable by playing with the fundamental chemical building blocks of how these materials are made. So, I think from a sustainability perspective, we're approaching this in lots of different ways. And this is kind of where we are across the sector.
It's a really interesting set of compromises that you've talked about. You clearly want materials that do the job. There's clearly less environmental impact if they last for a longer period of time, which means you want them to be more concrete-like, but then you're left with things that are more concrete-like when they're finally finished. And there's energy to make things, there's energy to repair things, there's energy also in the recycling of things. So the whole thing, as always, is complicated, not straightforward. I was interested, you talked about the fact that composites are in those blades and therefore just are themselves contributing towards getting the UK towards net zero and so on. Are composites involved in other technologies that are particularly helping us in the way towards net zero? So I'm thinking more in automotive or in power generation other than wind. And so how are they being used in that kind of push to get to net zero?
Yeah, I mean, I think for fiber reinforced polymers, fiber reinforced plastics, I think the greatest sort of impact that people tend to see are across automotive and aerospace. So every every week, every year, you'll hear a different aircraft manufacturer, the likes of Airbus and Boeing, talk about they've managed to make this next generation of aircraft, 10% more efficient, by predominantly by using by changes to the composite structure of the material, as well as great advances in turbofan, so engine technology. So from a structural perspective, yes, of course, in aerospace, we reduce the weight of these structures, you get large savings in fuel emissions and usage in these aircraft. In automotive, there's been a similar push where we've gotten to the stage now where we can make automotive composites, one, at a low enough price for consumer vehicles to be commercially viable, two, at a quick pace. Because the key difference between aerospace and the automotive sector in terms of cycle times of things needing to come out is that in aerospace, you have months to put together a plane. It takes time. It takes as long as it takes. And I guess from a safety perspective, people are okay with waiting for a plane that takes, airlines put in orders years in advance. I think, from start to finish, it probably takes, a week or two, but still, long waiting times. In automotive, the sheer volume of cars that we need out on the roads, especially with this big push for net zero towards the use of electric vehicles, you need structures that are made very quickly. And this has always been the pull of metals. But we've made great developments in composites with regards to making them as quickly, if not quicker, than the way that we can shape these metals into chassis and different components in cars. So from the electric vehicle perspective, we know that these are one of the key technologies that will enable net zero in the future. And the key thing here is that, for every kilogram that you take away, you increase the range of these cars significantly. And there's a psychological aspect to people sort of choosing to go down the route of an electric vehicle. It's about, will I be able to make it to my destination without running out of power effectively? And the more of this weight we take away, swapping from metals to composites, the more people feel more comfortable because the range has increased. And this is a good way towards our net zero ambition. So I think those are two of the really nice examples that people like to use a lot. But I mean, they're big pushes in multiple sectors outside of this.
And where does your research fit into all of this? Because obviously, you've now described the whole world's fantastic developments over the last few years. What are you up to?
So my research focuses particularly on the one of the next challenges in composites materials, which is how do we make them effectively behave a bit more like metals? So
Okay.
we're in this strange situation where we've moved a lot of these primary structures away from metallics towards composites, which is great from from a weight savings and a strength perspective, and I've spoken a bit about how this enables net zero and sustainability and all the rest of it. But the problem is that, you know, there's lots of things that metals do naturally that composites or plastics can't do. Things like conduct electricity, things like conduct heat, things like stop electromagnetic or so radio interference waves from passing through them. You know, these are basic functionalities that metals tend to have just because of their structure that composites just don't have. So with that problem in mind, my research focuses on sort of using a hybridized approach to material production. So looking at mixing composite materials as well as metallics to get this sort of hybridized and joint approach to a solution. So I do a lot of work with embedding metallics in composites to try and make them electrically conductive, thermally conductive, and the benefits of this are that if we don't have to have two separate structures in a component. So for example, you know, going back to that point about battery boxes in cars, at the moment you have a composite battery box, which is great from a strength, stiffness, you know, the damage perspective, it's fantastic. But you know, you have these sort of internal air conditioning units that cool the batteries as the car runs, and this is necessary because the composite doesn't radiate the heat away because it's an insulator. Additionally, you sort of have these metallic plates inside and outside, which stops this electromagnetic radiation problem leaking out through the batteries and interfering with the electronics in the rest of the car and around you. But imagine if we didn't have to have two separate structures doing two separate things to have the total structure, and we could sort of embed all of this in one structure. You know, you'd slash the weight of the car, which improves the range and makes it a lot more sustainable. I mean, you'd simplify manufacturing processes. You'd probably cut the cost quite a lot. You know, so this is where my research really plays into to sort of the sustainability of the composites industry and nets and our ambitions for achieving net zero or helping to achieve net zero.
So you're effectively trying to take the best properties of composites and the best properties of metals and find a compromise in between, which maybe isn't the absolute best in all of those, but has all of those characteristics in enough quantities that you have the material you need best for that use. Yeah.
Yeah, that's effectively what it is. It's trying to find, it's sort of a composite of a composite, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit strange in that kind of way. I'm starting with composites and adding something else to make it even more composite
Yeah.
to move forward. But yeah, that is the basic principle of the work.
Fantastic. It sounds absolutely fascinating. Listen, just before we close, I want to ask you a little bit about the Foundation Future Leaders Programme. You obviously joined the programme in 2024. It's fairly early still in the year, but what are you hoping to get out of this, and where do you want to go next, having been on the programme?
I think signing up for the program or getting into the program was a big moment for me because I do have quite a lot of interest in how the stuff we do in labs as scientists can sort of make better translations into to public policy, industrial policy, and so on. And so from my own sort of, you know, selfish perspective, I do see a lot of public policy in, you know, in favor of the use of composites in particular ways, but I also at the same time see a lot of policy that in my view doesn't best utilize composites in a sensible way, and sort of expanding on this, my ambitions are to sort of be able to be in the room in a sensible way and contribute towards this push for better policy to support the use of these, you know, advanced materials that we will need increasingly now and in the future, to reach our net zero ambitions and beyond. So far the Foundation Future Leaders Program has been a fantastic experience for me, a lot of really, really great learning. And I think that it public policy and sort of engaging with government and parliament and everybody outside of academia is a bit of a black box for academics. You know, we this is not a course that we get taught ever. You know, we sort of stay in the lab and come up with this really fantastic idea, and then at the end of it, we try to present this to the world and say, "Oh my God, look at how amazing this thing is that I've come up with." And then, you know, everybody sort of looks at it and say, "Well, that's great, but how does this help me?" So a lot of this and a lot of the program and sort of, you know, things like participating in this chat with you today is about being able to better communicate the stuff that I do and the stuff that we do more broadly in composites and advanced materials at Cranfield University to a wider audience, and sort of, get people to understand that this is what we need for the future, and it's important to support fundamental research in this way.
Absolutely. Well, that is all we have time for, but also a great place to finish. So, Dr. Geoffrey Neal, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, Gavin.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Foundation for Science and Technology. My guest this week was Dr. Geoffrey Neal, Royal Academy of Engineering Research Fellow and lecturer at the Composites and Advanced Materials Centre at Cranfield University, and also a member of the 2024 Foundation Future Leaders Programme. You can find information about the work of the Foundation for Science and Technology on our website at www.foundation.org.uk. There's information there about all our events, about the Foundation Future Leaders Programme, all of our journals and blogs, and all previous editions of this podcast. Until the next time, goodbye.